Natural Living with Gary Nall, Mondays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. People of all ages, all races, all backgrounds, all educational levels, economic levels, they enjoy this program because they're going to be empowered. I can promise you I will share information in the next 60 minutes you have never heard before from any source. We do our homework. We honor our audience. New, fresh, vital material every single program. 15 hours a week is what we broadcast. Overnight tonight, I'll be on my sister station, WKPFK in Los Angeles, where I've been for 25 years, broadcasting now over both the Progressive Radio Network and WPFW, serving the larger metropolitan area of Washington, D.C. and Baltimore. Today, my guest, Mike Adams, in the second part of our program, talking about healthcare, vaccines, Congress, White House failures to support a healthy America, renewed FDA attacks on alternative medicine. This is something you didn't know, but you need to. And why the corporations are in control. Also today, an in-depth, original review of the proof that the World Health Organization conspired with the FDA and CDC and the vaccine makers to cover up the vaccine autism connection. Dr. Russell Blaylock, The Truth Behind the Vaccine Cover-Up, a commentary with my own input a little later on in the show. And then we have the latest on health and nutrition. Let's go right to it. I will not have time for calls in the first part of our program, but I do hope to get to some in the second part. Treatment with beta-carotene is improving retinitis pigmentosa in some patients. According to the American Academy of Ophthalmology, the beta-carotenes, a carotenoid that acts as a precursor to vitamin A, helps improve vision in patients with retinitis pigmentosa. That's a group of inheritable disorders of the retina, which is the light-sensitive tissue in the back of the eye. Retinitis pigmentosa frequently begins with the onset of night blindness in childhood, followed by the loss of peripheral vision, resulting in tunnel vision and the possibility of eventual blindness. So what they did in this double-blind, placebo-controlled study under the auspices of a Dr. Rotensteig and others, they gave a group of vitamin A in the form of beta-carotene, and the others got a placebo. And they found, quote, "We recommend that this is important to pay attention with a beta-carotene. We know it is positive in its effect. It's associated with retinoid cycle defect, which is involved in some but not all forms of retinitis pigmentosa. So get your beta-carotene. How do you get that? The best form? Vegetables. Broccoli, kale, asparagus, watercress, alfalfa, sunflower sprouts. Those are all good sources of beta-carotene. Now, if you're going to take some nutrients, the omega-3 fatty acids is also a good thing to take. This study, which was done in the European Union, one of their major studies, showed that the DHA in the omega-3 fatty acids can help if you have metabolic syndrome, meaning diabetes, prediabetes, hypoglycemia, lacking in energy. And this was a major study, and so they did a double-blind placebo-controlled study in 300 patients, and they looked at several metabolic symptom marker, quote, initial studies examining DHA from the omega-3 fatty acids, mainly from fish oil, effect on metabolic syndrome have yielded promising results. We are encouraged that further inquiry will provide additional support for an increasing our health conditions with omega-3. So, take 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams a day of your omega-3s and help if you are overweight, suffer from fatigue, if you have an underactive thyroid, or if you have diabetes or are pre-diabetic. You're watching on television, many of the commercials are for pharmaceutical drugs, either prescription or over-the-counter. Well, there's one of those drug companies, the giant Pfizer, that has been caught doing a lot of bad things over its career. Here's just the latest from David Gutierrez. Quote, giant drug company Pfizer has canceled a scheduled clinical trial of its antipsychotic drug Gedone after the FDA accused it of subjecting child participants in a prior study to, quote, widespread overdosing. Okay. So Pfizer agreed to pay $2.3 billion to settle a collection of federal and state criminal and civil charges that it had improperly marketed this drug and three other drugs. It was making it $1 billion a year, so they gave back a little bit of what they made. But in the interim, didn't help anybody, and they were overdrugging children. Some ethics for those people. Kids' drinks frequently are contaminated with lead. That's right. 85% of beverages marketed to children contain levels of lead high enough to require warning under California's Safe Drinking Water and Toxic Enforcement Act of 1986, popularly known as Proposition 65. The Environmental Law Foundation used previously published studies to evaluate which kinds of food products are most likely to contain lead. And then they found that it's juices that these kids drinks. In fact, of 125 products tested, 85% contained high enough amounts of lead that, quote, it requires a clear and reasonable warning on the package. Now, the FDA classifies lead exposures up to 6 micrograms a day as tolerable, but the American Academy of Pediatrics warned that, quote, no safe level of lead exposure exists, in part because the heavy metal accumulates in the body over the course of a lifetime. Quote, lead exposure among children is a particular concern because their developing bodies absorb lead at a higher rate and because children are particularly sensitive to lead's toxic effects, according to Dr. Barbara Callahan, University of Massachusetts, in this study. Who knew? Well, then I want to know which juices. So here's what we found. The products found to be contaminated were Earth's Best Organics Apple Juice, Trader Joe's Certified Organic Apple Juice, pasteurized, Del Monte's 100% Juice Fruit Cocktail, Safeway's Diced Peaches in Light Syrup, and S&W Sun and Pear Premium. You can get a list of all that by going to envirolaw.org. Who knew that lead was getting into our kids, and that can be a major problem. Well, here's something that is good to take, and that's celery and peppers, especially some red peppers. Taking celery and peppers does what? It helps reduce age-related memory deficits. That's right. A diet rich in plant compounds, lutein, reduces age-related inflammation in the brain and related memory defects by directly inhibiting the release of inflammatory molecules in the brain. Lutein is found in many plants, including carrots, peppers, celery, olive oil, peppermint, rosemary, and chamomile. This new study published in the Journal of Nutrition, and researchers found that the microglial cells, specialized immune cells that reside in the brain spinal cord, produce the signals called cytokines, which spur a cascade of chemical changes in the brain. Some of these signaling molecules, the inflammatory cytokines, induce sickness behavior, the sleepiness, the loss of appetite, the memory deficits, and depressive behaviors that often accompany illness. Well, inflammation in the brain also appears to be a key contributing factor to age-related memory loss. So the University of Illinois and Professor Rodney Johnson did the study. Quote, we found previously that during normal aging, microglial cells become dysregulated and begin producing excessive levels of inflammatory cytokines. We think this contributes to cognitive aging and is a predisposing factor for the development of neurodegenerative diseases. So what comes to the rescue? What's the good news in this? Celery and peppers help in stopping this because they have the anti-inflammatory effects. So celery juice. Now, a great cocktail each day would be to have celery, cucumber, and apple, or celery, cucumber, apple, and grapes. That's good. I can recall when the FDA said that there was no benefit to using magnets for anything. And then the quackbuster says, oh, anybody who suggests magnets are crazy. There's no proof to their benefit. This is the latest from Science Daily. This is mainstream science. Let me quote. John O'Sullivan had struggled with bipolar depression since he was a teen. He has tried numerous types of psychotherapy and medication, but nothing seemed to help for long. And then he is a salesman whose profession required a constant projection of a positive, upbeat image to be successful. O'Sullivan found that his condition frequently left him feeling listless and restless. He switched jobs often and had difficulties in his family. Quote, when you're in a maniacal state with bipolar, it's not like you're often happy. You're irritable and hard to live with. Sullivan, a husband, father of five, said that's been tough on the family. At age 50, desperate, Sullivan was cautiously intrigued when his Loyola University Medical Center's psychiatrist, Dr. Rao, told him about a new non-invasive therapy that uses magnetic waves to treat his condition. My first thought is, what is this? But he was open-minded. Known as transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS, the treatment delivers a series of electrical pulses to the brain associated with depression and other mood disorders. And the pulses generate an electrical current in the brain that stimulates neurons to increase release of more mood-enhancing chemicals like serotonin, dopamine, and norepinephrine. Quote, the electrical pulses target the nerve cells in a region of the brain called the left prefrontal cortex, the region of the brain that regulates our moods. That's according to the chairman of Loyola's Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neurosciences. A study involving 301 patients that was recently published in the journal Brain Stimulation found that this magnetic brain stimulation to be, quote, an effective long-term treatment for major depression. Again, an effective long-term treatment for major depression. I remember at the Tri-State Healing Center in 1995, 15 years ago, we were using electromagnetic stimulation to help people with depression, including transcranial magnetic stimulation. We did it 15 years ago. There were over 500 articles in the peer-reviewed literature in Italy and in Russia and in France showing the power of magnets. We just weren't using magnets in the United States. Now we know how powerful magnetic healing can be. And mainstream science is now showing it. And finally, treating cancer with light. This is also from Science Daily. This is a major study, and here's what it says. I'll quote this. Can skin cancer be treated with light? Scientists at the University of California, Irvine, believes yes. They're exploring new ways to image cancerous lesions using LEDs that might advance a technique for treating cancer called photodynamic therapy, a work that they will describe at the Optical Society's 94th annual meeting. And in the phototherapy, it's a photosensitizing chemicals that absorb light are injected into major tumor, which is then exposed to light. The chemicals generate oxygen molecules and from the light energy. that destroys the cancer cells. This therapy is currently approved by the Food and Drug Administration for the treatment of esophageal and lung cancer. And one of the scientists, Sager, who works at the lab at the Beekman Laser Institute at University of California, Irvine, in collaboration with Dr. Kelly, believes that this therapy could also be used to treat skin cancer. So, quote, through this imaging modality, it is now possible to assess how the therapeutic light will travel throughout the affected tissues, quantify the drug present within the lesion, and monitor its efficacy during treatment. Now, that's good, using light. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. And this is the longest broadcasted non-commercial radio program in American history on a daily basis, 34 years. And the number one health nutrition program in the history of the United States. 23,000 broadcasts. 15 hours a week. If you live on the East Coast, tomorrow morning, 6 to 8 hours on KPFK Los Angeles, you can go to GaryKnoll.com. or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com to see how you connect in to KPFK to listen live over the air. If you live on the West Coast, it's midnight to 6. Mike Adams talking about health care, vaccines, the Congress, the White House, failures to support a healthier America, and how is it the FDA can send in SWAT teams armed, locked, and loaded, ready to blow someone's brains out, and the danger? Raw milk. A raw milk cheese. Boy, that's a terror, isn't it? My goodness. What have we become? We'll get to that in a moment. But a couple things on our environmental issue. You've heard me mention that before you move somewhere, check to see its long-term water, its water resources. Because a lot of people move to a beautiful place, might have good schools, might have work, low taxes, but does it have water? 16 states do not have adequate water to sustain the people, industry, for the future. And Lake Mead is one of the largest reservoirs of water for California and Los Angeles and other areas. It's going out of water. Quote from today's New York Times, the water level in Lake Mead, the massive reservoir that fills the taps of millions of people across the Southwest, has reached a record low. The Federal Bureau of Reclamation is stating this. Even after thunderstorms and rain in the Las Vegas area, Lake Mead level dropped to its lowest level since it was built. And this means that they only have 8 feet of water before they have to go into severe rationing. And that'll be in Nevada and Arizona first. And you just have to understand that it could seriously jeopardize Hoover Dam's hydroelectric output because of how much water it uses. So people are not aware of it, but they could be hit with water rationing. And that means gardens are going to die. That means you're going to be really restricted. So pay attention to water. Kara Lee, our program director, is in the studio. Hi, Kara.
Good afternoon, Gary. Well, I just had a couple issues that were sent along to me, and I thought maybe you could answer a couple of them on air.
Sure, be happy to. And also, let's give out our number, because I will be taking some calls before I do my commentary and have my guest. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'd like to know what are on people's minds. What are your questions, your thoughts, input you'd like? We'd like to hear from you now. Yes, Kara.
All right, Gary. Well, starting off, I know you talked a lot about cancer yesterday, and one of the things I was hoping you could address today is, you know, there's been a lot of coverage in the tabloids about Elizabeth Edwards, the wife, ex-wife of John Edwards, and also Michael Douglas, both unsuccessfully struggling with cancer. And I wasn't sure if there's anything you would recommend to them or try to inform listeners about in terms of ways to get healthy and turn it around.
I had someone had sent me from our audience a statement where Elizabeth Edwards has been meeting, I guess in the last week, and said that she's, quote, done. Her treatment has failed. And she's had treatment, chemotherapy, the radiation, whatever it is, repeatedly, hasn't worked. So she's kind of giving up at this point. Stage 4 in cancer. Michael Douglas, he's putting on the brave fight. And he's had his chemotherapy and radiation. If anyone knows either of these individuals, they're more than welcome to contact me in New York. We do have therapies that have helped people who already have end-stage cancer. In fact, when Farrah Fawcett and Patrick Swayze both had their cancer, people in this audience contacted them. And word came back, well, this is all nonsense. So, in the case of Patrick Swayze, we sent him the names and phone numbers of 5 people who had had end-stage pancreatic cancer and today are cured, 5 years after their treatment, using alternative natural approaches, not mine, but other, including Dr. Gonzalez, Nicholas Gonzalez, that there's no cancer. He chose not to go that route, as did Farrah Fawcett. And even the therapy she was using in Germany was an orthodox therapy. It was not what you would get in America, but it was still an orthodox therapy. I believe that people should understand that we have thousands upon thousands of Americans who are alive and well today who've had a death diagnosis and end up being cured. It was 1976 that I wrote the first articles in the United States in a major journal on the politics of cancer. It had been a sacred cow to that point. No one believed that we would politicize or do anything for just pure economic gain off cancer, off people dying. They were wrong. The whole field of cancer is nothing more but a giant fraud. And with all the hundreds of billions of dollars spent, all we have is more people dying each year with cancer. So I decided to seek the truth, and I went around the world, and whether it was in the Bahamas to Dr. Burton or in Germany to Dr. Joseph Issels, to San Diego with Dr. Virginia Livingston Wheeler, Houston, Dr. Stanislaw Brzezinski, New York, Dr. Emmanuel Ribisi, I sought out individuals who had successfully treated terminally ill people. The criteria was they must be able to establish that a statistically significant number of their patients had been treated elsewhere, Sloan Kettering, MD Anderson, Houston, but had failed. So when they had the patient was end stage, nothing left, morphine to kill the pain, hospice care, and dead. That's when they went to work. And it took me 5 years, full time, because I had to wait a period of time to see the outcome of their treatments. I reviewed more than 5,000 patient records. I contacted patients, and I was able to establish more than 700 patients out of the 5,000 that I could actually find who were alive and well with no cancer in their bodies 5 years after they'd been treated by one of those people at one of those clinics. These people are all legitimate medical doctors, with the exception of Lawrence Burton, who was a PhD, but in oncology. All of them had published in peer-reviewed journals. None of them had any secret formulas. They were all legitimate. And they were helping people. So I then went to the National Cancer Institute, and I went to the Pan Am Cancer Group, and I said, why don't you give each of these doctors 100 patients? Then you take 100 patients, let them do their treatment, and you do your treatment, whether it's a five-floor uracil or adriamycin, whatever you're doing, it's cisplatin, your chemotherapy, and then at the end of a year, see who has the patients who are alive or who has the patients who've died. They refused to do that. But they all had something in common. They were all attacked by the American Cancer Society for quackery. And the man who had the book at the American Cancer Society was a man named Cognam Woods. So I spoke with Mr. Woods, and I was able to, because the head of public relations for the American Cancer Society at that time was a man named Pat McGrady. And he'd been there for like 25 years. And he was a very respected, powerful voice in the world of cancer. But he was speaking on behalf of Orthodox Cancer. So here was my question. How do you get your name in this black book, the Unproven Methods of Cancer Management book? Well, you have to meet a majority of some 16 criteria. You're not a legitimate doctor, meaning you have a phony degree. You promise secret cures. You never publish your results. You never present your work before a group of scientists who could judge your work and evaluate it. You don't have any evidence of any clinical studies. Those were just some of the ways. And you promote very expensive treatments. Each one of the people involved met not one criteria. They all were legitimate scientists and medical doctors. They presented their results at open scientific meetings, published in peer-reviewed journals. In fact, Dr. Burton actually was sponsored by the American Cancer Society and by the Damon Runyon Cancer Fund and U.S. Public Health Service. But when he wouldn't sell his protocol to the group of scientists over at the American Cancer Society, they blackballed him. This was not the first time I'd seen this happen. This had also happened with carbiocin and Hoxie's therapy. Both Hoxie, who had treated more people in American history for cancer more successfully than anyone else in history, had been destroyed by a real bad person at the American Medical Association, Dr. Fishbein, who himself was a complete nut job. But in any case, they had official support, government and whatnot. Anyhow, so after I did my review, I did a series of documentaries, then I published the results. And this was really something, because no one had done this before. And I got a call from Don Hewlett at 60 Minutes. And he said, "You're talking about this Lawrence Burton curing these people?" And I said, "Yes, that's correct. I was there. I've seen the therapy. I've interviewed the people. I followed them for 5 years, so it's 100% legitimate. Come in." So I went into 60 Minutes office in New York, and I met with him, took a whole two cases of all the records, my taped interviews, everything. I left him there. They would later do a one-hour special on Dr. Lawrence Burton, conveniently leaving me out. Then a year later, I did a story on Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski in Houston, Texas. I received a call from Judy Moses, executive producer of 2020 on ABC. And Judy says, "You know, we're really impressed with this article and how methodical you are. And we want to do a story on this." So she came over to my office and I met with her. And I gave her two gigantic file boxes full of all my notes and interviews and tape recordings. And I was in touch with her, and she called, and she had two of her researchers speak with me about different aspects. And then on the day, an hour before it was to be broadcast, and I told my radio audience, I'm going to be on, I won't be on, but I'll be mentioned. First, I was going to be filmed, then, well, you know, we're going to put all of our energy on Brzezinski. And then I'll never forget this. And by the way, I recorded this, so I actually have Judy Moses, in case she ever decides to lie, or anyone at 60 Minutes, 2020, decide to lie. I have them all on tape. I tape them all. Never talk with any government official or media person unless you tape them, because they're all pathological liars. In any case, so I have a whole tape of this. And she says this to me. She says, "Gee, Gary, bad news." "What's the bad news?" "Well, we can't give you any credit on the story." I said, "But it's my story." "You wouldn't have a story. I did the investigation. No one else in America did. It's mine. I gave it to you." She said, "I know, but they don't want it to look like Geraldo didn't do his work." I said, "But Geraldo didn't do any work." She says, "Well, I know, but the lawyers and everyone, blah, blah, blah." I said, "Okay." She says, "But look at the better good, Gary. People will learn about Brzezinski and go and get treated." And I said, "You're correct. That's right. And I do look at the larger good. But what would it have cost you just to have acknowledged that this story was originated and produced by Gary Nall?" It took me 5 years of my life to work on this story. She says, well, you're right, but that's how the politics of it is. Now, so Geraldo won an Emmy, 60 Minutes, and Judy Moses won an Emmy for my work. Now, if you think 60 Minutes are a bunch of, you know, thieves, they are. And there's a woman named Susan Kreil. Susan Kreil is one of America's great artists. She's highly respected. Her brother was a producer at 60 Minutes. Do you remember the movie with Tom Hanks and Julie Roberts about the Mujahideen and how America infiltrated into that Pakistan-Afghan conflict when Russia was in Afghanistan, and how we undermine the Russian efforts by supplying arms and training to the Mujahideen that would later become Al-Qaeda? That story was her brother. And he died just before that was the movie was released, I think a couple months before, of cancer. Anyhow, she told me repeatedly how often people give their stories and don't realize that they'll use your story and not give you credit. But that's the industry. That's the whole stinking industry. It's also true with a lot of reporters. They don't have their own original brains, so they use other people's. But I still am not angry about it for a simple reason, because the better good was served. And you have to keep looking at that. But what it did, it established for the first time in America that the mainstream media and scientists and researchers were willing to acknowledge that alternative approaches to cancer were legitimate, that this wasn't anecdotal, that there were meticulous records, and that opened it up. Then the person who did give me credit was Greg, a 10-part series done on Channel 5, no, done on NBC in New York, Gabe Pressman. Gabe Pressman is a highly ethical reporter, and he did a 10-part series, and then I did a total of 56 cover stories on different aspects of medicine, and these were on subways and billboards everywhere. You know, cancer cure covered up, and I mean, it was a major campaign, and it caused a whole revolution in medical journalism, because it showed that we've been lied to and manipulated by the cancer establishment. And so Peter Barry Chalka and Bob Houston, a lot of people were able to come, and Moss, you've heard of Dr. Moss? He was working at Sloan Kettering at the time. He was assistant in a public relations department, and he had heard of a Dr. Sugiura over there who had been able to reverse cancer in mice at a statistically significant level using Mignolin or Laetrol. And they were keeping it covered up. Now, this was their oldest and most venerated scientist at Sloan Kettering. He was like in his 70s. And when he wanted to talk about it, they fired him. He came to me. I, in turn, spoke with Steve Dunleavy at the New York Post, who I knew and shared information with. And Steve came over to my apartment and met with Ralph Moss. And based upon that meeting, the next day they had a front-page story in the New York Post about cancer cure covered up. So that was an exciting time. A lot. By the way, I never got a thank you from Ralph Moss. Again, I look at the quality of people and I say, okay, I always look at the better good. I wished at some point in my life I'll actually meet people who can say thank you. But that's okay. As long as lives are saved, that's what's important. But it started, we didn't knock on the door. We broke the door down of the cancer establishment. And then later we do it with heart disease. And then now we're doing it with vaccines. But we're much better organized now. And now we have the internet, not just one magazine. By the way, I went to Harper's, Atlantic Monthly, Mother Jones, Ms. Magazine. Nobody would touch these stories. So the alternative media and the left were so terrified of the consequences going up against the cancer establishment, they all backed down. They were all cowards. The irony of it is that the managing director of Mother Jones was the niece of one of the guys who I was doing a feature on, Dr. Emmanuel Rivisi. And he's my uncle and he's great, but I you know, we'd lose all of our advertising. And thank goodness for Bob Guccione, who didn't fear losing advertising. He did. He lost $7 million with advertising, but he went ahead with it because he said, I never will forget, he turns to me at a meeting, and there were like 12 people around this table. This is before the first article was published. And he said, should we do this article exposing the fraud and cancer and the fact there are cures that are being repressed? And every one of the people at that table said no. The managing editor said no. Jim Good said no. And this gigantic lawyer named Roy Grotman, who was the official, he says, we'll get murdered with lawsuits. You want to end this whole magazine? Then do this. And he published Longevity and Genesis and a lot of other, and Omni magazine. But he turned to me in a very quiet voice. He says, Gary, do you really believe that we can prove that there are doctors out there who are curing cancer using natural therapies that we don't know about, it, and these doctors are being harassed, suppressed, attacked? And I said, yes. He said, you realize if you're wrong, my entire publishing empire will be destroyed. And I said, yes. And if I'm right, hundreds of thousands of men and women will be alive who otherwise would be dead. And he stopped for a moment. He looked at me. And he said, you're right. And he said, we are going to publish. Man, these people looked at me like they had daggers. And I got out on the street, and the managing editor almost punched me in the chest with his finger, saying, I will never let your articles in my magazine. I said, they're not your magazine. It's his magazine. And he says, it won't happen. Well, it did happen. But they put us through a vetting process where everything had to be triple checked by lawyers and fact checkers and outside scholars. It was finally published, and think of all the people who are alive today who otherwise be dead. The trouble is you have to keep reminding people, because that's a whole part of history that they've forgotten. Right now, if you contacted anyone in the media, they'd say alternative therapies, no, there's no proof they work. They forgot this major revolution that occurred in journalism and medicine, and we won for a period of time. Now we have to reinstitute a whole nother battle and get people's conscience on vaccines and our healthcare system. So if Mrs. Edwards wants to know about other therapies that could save her life even at this end stage, then someone should reach out to her and tell her to call Gary Nall in New York. And I remember Stokely Carmichael coming to me, and when he was sick, and I got a call from Miss King's family, Loretta King, Martin Luther King's wife, and I said, I wouldn't go to Mexico if I were you. It's not the place to go. But they went to Mexico. And Bob Marley, in fact, he lived an extra year and a half because of work that we helped him with. So I don't tell people about all the people I help, including the famous people. There are a lot of them. There are a lot of famous people today who are alive and well. No one knows. Some of them don't even know they even had cancer because they never let it out. But there are ways of helping Michael Douglas. There are ways of helping Miss Edwards if they choose it. But Patrick Swayze didn't choose it, and Farrah Fawcett didn't choose it. That's how much power orthodoxy has. The cult of orthodox medicine, and it is a cult, and it's a deadly cult. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary.
In a moment, Mike Adams, please stay with us, back to take on the medical establishment. You are connected to the one radio program that more independent and progressive minds listen to than any other radio program in the United States. And I want to thank the audience. 341% increase in our Arbitron ratings in one rating book from the winter to the spring. That's the largest increase I've ever heard of in any radio program in American history. So thank you. We got a lot of people listening. Let's go over and say hello to Phoenix, Arizona, to Mike Adams. He is one of the most important voices of the generation after me to have emerged in alternative medicine and public health issues. He is a fighter. He is uncompromising in his effort to get the truth out, and he has the resources, intellectual resources, academic resources, and financial resources to do the good work. He founded a very important group with naturalnews.com and has written over 1,600 articles, his group on health and critiques about modern medicine. And he writes under the title Health Ranger, his nonprofit organization, the Consumer Wellness Center, and publishes under Truth Publishing. Nice to have you with us today, Mike.
Hello, Gary. It's always an honor to join you. Thanks for having me on today.
Mike, I'm going to turn the form over to you. I'm going to give you the following. Recently, on YouTube, we had a chance to see something that was surprising. A group of armed, heavily armed men breaking in, guns pointed, you know, in the whole, you know, locked and loaded, ready to shoot. It wasn't a terrorist camp. It wasn't an organized crime den. It was a food co-op out in California where people had sunflower seeds on their shirts and sandals on their feet, and yet they were being treated like somehow they were terrorists, all because of the desire to get to that dangerous raw milk or raw milk cheese. That's just one example of how out of control and over the top the FDA has become. I want you to take us through your analysis of Congress, the White House, how they're puppets for the major food groups and corporate interest, and how the FDA is their attack dog, and we should be aware of this. The forum is yours.
Well, thank you, and that's a really relevant point to start with. This raid, it was on an organization called Rawsome Foods in Venice, California. And this was a food co-op, a private purchasing organization where members could come in and they could purchase raw milk or raw cheese and other, you know, dangerous products according to the FDA. And the reason this is such a great point to talk about when you're covering FDA and government tyranny over the food supply is because it is the conventional dairy industry that pressures the regulatory authorities to eliminate their competition. If consumers can go out and buy raw milk at food co-ops or from farmers next door, for example, then they're not going to go in and buy pasteurized, homogenized, processed milk. So it's a threat to the dairy industry, and the industry has a long history of pressuring the regulators to take action. But the real question, I think, is about our individual consumer freedom. Why can't we as individuals choose to purchase raw milk? You know, this country was raised on raw milk. If you think about it, you know, the pioneers, they had a cow on the farm, and they would milk the cow and drink the milk, and that's what kept many of them alive through hard winters here in North America. The idea of criminalizing the buying and selling of raw milk would have been considered insane by our country's founders. And yet today it's policy at the FDA. Well, and interrupt me anytime, Gary, if you want to
interject. No, you're on a roll. Go with it.
Well, if they can do this with raw milk, then what else might they target? Could raw spinach become illegal? Could raw broccoli become contraband? One day, might I or you or one of your listeners be pulled over and they open the trunk of our car and they find that we're smuggling 75 pounds of raw broccoli in duffel bags, and we get handcuffed and taken off to prison and prosecuted by our own government for selling food, real food? That's literally happening with raw milk, and it could happen to other foods. You see, the authorities want our food to be sterilized. They equate safety with sterilization. They don't understand that bacteria have an important role in our health. And in fact, exposure to bacteria, now I'm not talking about E. coli and Salmonella, I'm talking about normal, healthy soil microbes, for example, that you might find on healthy organic produce. Well, there's scientific evidence, published evidence, that says those microbes can increase human intelligence. Like playing in the dirt, literally, or inhaling dust from nature can literally increase your cognitive function. Having normal, regular exposure to microbes in the environment strengthens your immune system, giving you defenses against future infections. But because our regulators subscribe to the conventional approach, the reductionist attitude that says microbes are always a threat and only a sterile person or a sterile food item is safe, they believe that the food supply must be sterilized as well. So we are headed down a very dangerous path, Gary, where our rights, our freedoms are being taken away, our nutrition is being destroyed. You can't buy raw almonds in California anymore without breaking the law. They're all pasteurized or fumigated. And it's going to happen to more and more food items that we depend on.
Give us your view as an extension of that concept with Monsanto and Michael Taylor and Obama personally selecting Michael Taylor to head all of our food safety when he was the person promoting at Monsanto genetically engineered crops, including dairy, and then talk about how Fox Network tried to suppress an investigative reporting story on the dangers of bovine growth hormone in cattle to make more milk, and its own reporters couldn't get their story on. They had to go through a whole lawsuit and whistleblower's action, but the truth finally came out long after that. Where people would not have known that they were not drinking bovine genetically engineered milk.
Exactly. This demonstrates this revolving door between industry and government. And we see it, as you mentioned, with Monsanto. We see it with the processed meat industry. We see it with the dairy industry. The very people, for example, at the USDA that regulate the meat industry are often from the meat industry, and they may go back and forth. FDA regulators are often from pharmaceutical companies, and they go back and forth. Now, you mentioned about the bovine growth hormone labeling issue. That's a really crucial issue, because the FDA, its current position is that people should not be allowed to know the truth about what's in the products they buy. They have said that GMOs should not be labeled, because if a label said that this food product contains genetically engineered ingredients, that might be confusing to consumers. And the same was true with bovine growth hormone. They said that to claim on your milk carton that this milk comes from cows who have not been treated with growth hormones, that text would be confusing to consumers, and therefore it should not be allowed. What we're looking at here, Gary, is an agency that wants people to remain nutritionally illiterate. It is a de-education campaign to keep consumers in the dark on issues that greatly impact their health.
Let's take a look at vaccines. Vaccines are a very pernicious issue because we are being mass mandated to get into colleges, to work in a hospital setting, to go to schools, to get our vaccines, and yet they say they're safe and effective. And we say, prove it. We've looked at the literature, and we can't find a single vaccine that by any legitimate gold standard can be shown to be safe or effective for a given child or a given adult, individually, let alone collectively. But we can show them the relationship between vaccines and autism, vaccines and neurodevelopmental problems. Your thoughts on the whole issue of vaccination?
This is the pivotal issue for the reasons that you mentioned. Conventional medical science calls itself scientific, and they say they follow the gold standard of science, and many physicians, conventional physicians who are promoting vaccines, they quite literally believe in their own minds that these vaccines have been proven safe and effective. But if you ask them, well, where's the scientific evidence? They don't know. It doesn't exist. if you really look hard at the literature, you won't find any kind of conclusive proof or even strong evidence to show that the vaccines, for example, that seasonal flu vaccines prevent seasonal flu symptoms. They really don't. So you have to really start to question the entire foundation of modern conventional medical beliefs. As you mentioned in your segment before I joined you here, it has become a cult. It is a cult of what others have referred to as scientism. It's a system of self-reinforcing beliefs among peers who all believe they're right, none of whom have taken a look at the evidence or bothered to really investigate what it is they're promoting to patients. I mean, you and I know that vitamin D supplementation alone is probably the best prevention against seasonal flu, and if you combine it with other nutrients and other immune-enhancing substances, then your risk of contracting flu symptoms very nearly approaches zero. But that fact, which is supported by good science, will never be communicated to the public because there's a vaccine agenda underway.
By the
Everybody
way, Mike,
line up.
We actually brought in every single study that supports from the pro-vaccine side the safety and efficacy of every vaccine. We did a complete microanalysis of each one, and they were laughably inept. For example, with the women, pregnant women, if you developed a high fever of 102 within 72 hours of getting the flu vaccine, you were excluded from the study. If you had taken any antipsychotic medication, antidepressants, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, you were excluded. If you took alcohol, you were excluded. If you have any heart problems, you were excluded. If you had cancer, you were excluded. And yet, those very people who were excluded from being tested for the flu vaccine were given the flu vaccine. So is the entire hypocrisy of this whole field. My final question for you, and take your time on this. We now have a White House that's so out of control and over the top in the pocket of special interest groups that not even the most ardent Democrats can support that it's being objective in helping people when it comes to our health care system. This health care problem, our Congress, the White House, it's been nothing but failures when it comes to getting Americans healthy. Give us your thoughts on this.
Well, my opinion has always been, Gary, that because of the corporate control, the influence over Congress and the White House, that today it hardly matters who's in the White House or who's in Congress. The system itself is so corrupting that these candidates, these politicians, realize they can't get elected without kowtowing to the pharmaceutical interests and the agricultural interests. So the system is so broken, and it is driving our nation into not just disease and despair, but also financial bankruptcy. The only way that we can recover from the situation we're in today is to have new leadership that somehow recognizes the importance of preventing disease, teaching nutrition, banning poisonous, toxic ingredients from the food supply, and returning food freedoms to the American people. No nation in the world, no matter how much money it has, can afford to fund generation after generation of degenerative disease and everything that goes along with it, including loss of cognitive function, which affects people's voting abilities. Why do people vote poorly? Why do they make poor decisions about who they elect? Partially because they are suffering from chronic degenerative disease. It's not a popular topic to discuss, but I think you'll agree it has a strong impact.
The largest amount of money spent in the world each year is spent on the medical industrial complex in the United States. $2.6 trillion this year. And you don't hear anyone talking about changing any of that income flow. That's what's amazing.
It is amazing. Washington is so vested in protecting the pharmaceutical industry that it simply can't imagine how to operate without protecting that industry. And yet, that industry doesn't serve the greater good of the people. It doesn't serve the long-term interests of the nation. And in fact, I've said this publicly many times, that if America stays on its current path of conventional medicine and pharmaceuticals and chemotherapy, you mentioned Michael Douglas earlier, a great example of someone who has, in my opinion, made the wrong choice. But if our nation continues to make that decision, it is not sustainable. It will financially collapse, if nothing else. And, you know, at some point, we've got to get to the idea that a healthy nation, a prosperous economy, must be founded on healthy people. That is a fundamental truth that we are about to learn the hard way in America.
I would agree with that. Mike, thank you very much. Give people an idea when they can hear you on the radio.
Well, I'd be happy to come back anytime you'd like. I always enjoy talking with you, Gary. My website, Natural News, is available every day with articles. And like you, I'm just trying to get people to think about these issues and learn how they can protect their own health.
Also, Mike can be heard every Saturday at 6 p.m. right here on the Progressive Radio Network. Mike, thank you very much. All the best to you.
Thank you, Gary. Take care.
Mike Adams from Mountain Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Gary Noll. We're coming up to the end of our program. Just a couple program announcements. Tonight, we begin our first meeting of our Healing the Brain Naturally study project, which will last 6 months, and we're documenting it. We have our neurologists and all of our experts there who will monitor what happens when we change people's unhealthy lifestyles to healthy lifestyles. And we're filming it all, so we'll have a good record to show you on the internet as we go. Otherwise, tomorrow morning, if you're on the East Coast, get up at 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and go to GaryNoll.com, and then you can click on KPFK so you can hear me on KPFK. I'll be on for 6 hours, as I am every Wednesday morning. Then tomorrow at noon, back on the Progressive Radio Network. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
Is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.
One final item. I've been informed that...